welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn and this is episode number 225 of the podcast, and it's 5th of July 2015 as I record this. And I'm actually recording it early as I'm in New York this week for Thrillerfest, and as this goes out on the Monday, I'll be over somewhere over the Atlantic flying home. I will have taken the awesome sleeping pills that you guys sell like in vending machines in America. that we can only sort of get on prescription in Britain, and I'll be sleeping my way across the Atlantic. So yes, recording early, this episode will go out on 13th of July. So today I have a super interview with Frances Caballo about who's at socialmediajustforwriters.com, and we're talking about the effective use of social media and how to avoid the time suck. Now, I went into the interview with Frances thinking that I knew what I was doing on social media, but I learned a whole load from the interview. So you'll definitely want to take some notes or check out the show notes. You can always find the show notes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts, and you'll find the list of episodes there with all the transcripts and all the links you need. So in terms of personal updates, I'm going to add that Deviance is out on pre-order, the third in the London Psychic Trilogy, as I have really rounded up the story over three books. So it's definitely complete as it stands. I mean, I can write some more around the characters. I've definitely left that open. And the books are standalone, of course, as all my books can be read standalone. But I've pretty much rounded out a three book arc. So I want to read you the back blurb, which I'm still finessing, because as you know, I kind of want to do this because I want to prove that writing this is one of the hardest things we do. And I'll read it when I read it out. It's going to set it in kind of audio stone, but I bet you if you have a look on any of the ebook stores, you'll find that the text has changed in the future. But anyway, so here you go. Who is the sinner and who is the saint? When the body of a priest is found in the ruins of Winchester Palace, his tattooed arms flayed, his mouth stuffed with feathers, the alternative community of Southwark huddle in fear. Private investigator Jamie Brooke begins the hunt for the murderer, aided by Blake Daniel, a psychic researcher who is haunted by visions of the past. As violence erupts, leaving a trail of bodies in its wake, Jamie and Blake must find the skin collector before those they love are taken down. A crime thriller with an edge of the supernatural, Deviance by J.F. Penn is the story of a struggle for power against the backdrop of London. So there you go. There is Deviance. And again, you know, J.F. Penn is my fiction alter ego. But you can find the book for pre-order on Amazon, iBooks and Kobo, and it will launch on 31st of July 2015. So by the time you're listening, it may already be out. It will also be coming in print and audiobook. So I wanted to, because I don't have any sort of tweets or updates at the moment because I'm recording this literally straight after the intro from last week's show. I'll update on those next week. So if you have tweeted me in the meantime, I will read you out next week. But I wanted to mention that it is July, and perhaps you haven't really fully appreciated the fact that we're in the middle of the year yet, but I wanted to bring it up because I wanted to check in with you all and see how your goals are going for this year. So I'm a goal-setting freak, as I'm sure you realise. I love setting goals. I love meeting my goals and documenting my goals. But I'm not afraid to change my goals either. And because you all keep me accountable, I wanted to fess up to some of my things. And I will share mine, as long as you promise that you will check in with what you wanted to achieve this year and kick yourself up the ass and get your move on, get a move on. So for me, one of my big goals, obviously, for all of us, we are creatives and creating new things in the world is important. So I had a goal of 6 new books published in 2015. I've already put out Gates of Hell, which might be a cheat. I can't remember if I counted it last year. So that's it's on the fence. I definitely published it in 2015. One Day in New York also came out, and How to Make a Living with Your Writing is out, and Deviance is out. So that's 4 books. So I'm on track, and I might even reach 7 by the end of the year, which would be good. I'm just plotting my first co-writing and my collaboration thing with Jay Thorne, and we're going to do a post-apocalyptic / dark fantasy standalone, which will be a lot of fun. And then I have Destroyer of Worlds, Arcane number 8, and I'm also starting to plot another series because the London Psychic trilogy is kind of wrapped up, so I have room in my brain. Surprisingly, I have room in my brain for something else, and so I'm going to start. I don't like just having one series. I think it's very important to have, to keep pushing ourselves as writers. So the Arcane series is now, it's actually quite easy for me to write and really fun for me to write, and so I don't really consider that pushing myself. So I want to stretch myself with something new. So one of the other goals I had that I am now ditching, I said I'm going to narrate my own audiobook, which I did. I narrated Business for Authors, which was super. You know, I found it highly rewarding, but it was also exhausting. I couldn't believe how tiring it was in terms of the amount of energy it took to narrate sort of 6 finished hours of audio was incredible. I said, you know, one of my goals was to narrate other people's books, and that is definitely not happening. I just don't have the time for that. It's crazy. I'm going to focus on creating my own assets. I thought I might be able to fit that in, but I'm choosing to do something else instead. So I actually gave up doing multimedia courses because I stopped selling my courses on the 31st of December. First reason was that there were some EU tax laws coming in that were just a pain in the neck. So I decided to shut down then. But also the courses were a bit dated. I'd recorded them a couple of years ago, you know, with partners. But, mainly I'd done them with partners because I wasn't that experienced sort of 3 years ago when I was recording those. Also, the landscape has really changed in that 3 years ago, I'm always early on this stuff. I mean, I did my first multimedia video course back in 2009, 2010, which was just way early. But what's happening now is actually the multimedia courses are really coming of age. And I've had emails from many of you. I can ignore one or two emails, but this has been sort of, 7 or 8 emails now of people saying, look, you know, it's all very well you recommending other people's courses. I recommend, I've been recommending Mark Dawson's Facebook course and Nick's 10K Readers and, you know, other people's courses. But we would like to know how you do things. So thank you for asking, those of you who have emailed. So I will be going back into doing some courses in the second half of the year. So the first one will be How to Make a Living with Your Writing, because that matches up with my latest nonfiction book. So that will be coming in August, and they won't be massive, and I'm not going to do massive launches. They'll be evergreen. I'm not really a super hypey salesperson. I'm sure you've noticed that. But I do want to be useful, and I think these new courses will be useful. So keep an eye out for those. I'll certainly announce them when they're up. Just back on the goals, I do have a big one I'm failing miserably at, which is no email before lunchtime. That's just not working. During my first draft writing phase, I'm definitely managing it because I'm waking up and going straight to cafe and writing. But when I'm not in first draft, I'm failing miserably. Anyway, just wanted to fess up to that. So how are you doing with your mid-year goals? I think that, you know, to keep you accountable, please do tweet me or email me. Let me know how your mid-year goals are going, or, you know, where you are in terms of that. Or you can chat on the Facebook page, facebook.com/thecreativepen. Okay, so no tweets today, as I mentioned. I will add them in next time. And this podcast episode is sponsored by 99 Designs. And you can go to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, for your free Power Pack upgrade. So in terms of your marketing budget, I actually think that the pro cover, professional cover that resonates with your target market is probably the best use of your money after editing. Editing, cover design, don't skimp on it, in my opinion. So you can get book covers at 99 Designs. You submit your project and then lots of designers submit options and you get to choose the one that you like. And there's no risk with 99 Designs as you only pay when you're happy with what is created and you get lots of choice with multiple designers submitting work. You can also get web page design, social media banners and headers, posters, postcards, flyers, email, newsletter templates, t-shirts, mugs and so much more. You can also get custom illustrations and other graphics, and I've used 99 Designs myself for the custom illustration of the key to the Gates of Hell, which features on the cover and inside the print book and looks awesome. So I'm really happy I did that. And that definitely had to be a custom illustration because where can you get a picture of the key to the Gates of Hell otherwise? So you can get a Power Pack upgrade, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed with bold headers, highlighted background and featured listing by going to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A. So this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a massive thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. And you can support the show if you like for even a dollar to a maximum of 2 shows a month. So you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Or of course, you can buy my books. Thank you. Let's get on with the interview. Hi, everyone. I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com. And today I'm here with Frances Caballo. Hi, Frances.
Hello, Joanna.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. So just a little introduction. Frances is an author and social media strategist and runs the fantastic site Social Media Just for Writers. So that's, you know, you do some great posts, Frances, and we hear you a lot. I read a lot of your posts. But tell us just a bit more about your background and how you moved into writing and social media.
I've been writing, as most writers, I've been writing forever since I was a kid, and journaling and little poems and et cetera. And I always wanted to be, I actually wanted to be a book critic, but I didn't think that would be a profitable career. So what I did was I worked as a journalist, and then I really got tired of the competitiveness. And I decided to use my writing and public relations skills to help nonprofits. And so then I worked in nonprofits and I worked for a national nonprofit eventually. And then social media popped on, you know, on the scene. And so then I just really took to it. I thought it was exciting. I'm the kind of person that when I get a job, it's exciting at first and then it becomes boring. And so social media is never boring because it's always changing. You always have to learn something. You always have to keep up with something. And so I don't get bored with the field and I love it.
Yeah. And it's funny what you just said there. It's never boring and you always have to keep up with something. That is both the good side and the bad side because, you know, really one of the reasons why you're on is because one of the biggest things that people have an issue with is the time suck of social media. And where do you draw the line between fun and marketing and time wasting? So you've written this, one of your books, Avoid Social Media Time Suck.
I know. So it's a terrible title,
tips.
I know.
No, it's a great title. Yeah. It does what it says. Yeah, give us some tips.
Okay, I think I need to start following them more closely. I was thinking about that this morning. Why don't I start following my own advice? So it's basically a four-step program. Number one, curate. Number two, schedule. Number three, socialize. Number four, analyze. So curate by going out there and looking for information that you want to share with your following. And that could come from your own news feeds. That could come from AllTop. That could come from a wonderful app called Sway, S-W-A-Y-Y. and just from your Twitter list. And so once you have all the and your own stuff, but you want to make sure that you're only promoting your own blog posts and your books 20% of the time, 80% of the time. You're just sharing great information. Your following wants to hear that will enrich their lives, that they will like, will help them in their professions, whatever niche you're in as a writer. And then number two, you have all this stuff that you want to get out there, and you use a scheduling application. Some people schedule for the day. That's what I do. Some people schedule for the week. I know a memoir writer who schedules for a month, and then she's done with it. All right. So their Hootsuite is something that a lot of people use. Buffer is very popular. I don't use either of those. I use Social Oomph, but so it just depends on how easy they are. And I think Hootsuite and Buffer are much easier to use than Social Oomph. And so then the third step is you can't treat social media as though it's broadcast media. You can't just constantly be sending your messages out there. You need to be listening. You need to be responding. You need to be sharing what your readers are saying, what's in their news feeds, what they may be blogging. And you look at your news feeds. You basically are a good friend, good follower. You like, you share, you retweet, etc. You respond to what they say. So you listen and you thank people for retweets, or you just, you thank people, you comment. And so the final step, the fourth step, is to analyze. And analysis can be simple. You can do it on a weekly basis. You can do it on a monthly basis. And there are a lot of free analytics. If you have a business Pinterest account, it's free analytics. You have a Twitter account, you have wonderful free analytics. And of course, if you're on Facebook, you have incredible free analytics with insights. If you want to pay for your analytics, you can look at Social Report, Sprout Social, or your own scheduling applications like Hootsuite and Social Oomph. They provide analytics. So that's basically my four-step program. So in the mornings, you want to spend 15 minutes looking for information and scheduling it, and then forgetting about it and getting back to your writing, getting back to your work. And then in the afternoons, you want to spend 15 minutes socializing. And then once a week or once a month, you spend a few minutes analyzing.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that was a whole load of brilliant information. And just for everyone, there is a transcript of every episode now, so people can go and replay that, or of course get your book. But you said some great things there. Okay, so I'm pretty good on everything except analytics. I have to say, I do no analytics whatsoever. I just I just go with what feels good, which is, you know, fair enough. It works in a way. And I think, because if you are your target market, then if you like something, you can share that, and it's not really an issue, because a proportion of them will like that. So I definitely don't measure what people share more than other things. But one thing we should say up front is images, right? Images on any social media, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, anything. Images are just everywhere now, aren't they? Why is that?
The brain can process images 60,000 times faster than text. And so it's easier for the brain to deal with, and because it's captivating. I mean, if you have an eagle with this incredible shot, or if you have this scrumptious picture of a molten chocolate cake, that's going to attract my eye. More than text. So I have this saying about Facebook. You have to balance the mundane with the meaningful, especially on a page, not a profile. So the mundane would be the chocolate cake. The meaningful would be content, great content. And so what I do on my Facebook page is, in the mornings I have great content, in the afternoons I have something more mundane, and it balances it. But yeah, images are phenomenally important. I think the social web is becoming more of a visual web, and we're seeing that with Instagram. We're seeing that with Pinterest, and the move towards images on Google+. The big space images get on Facebook over time. The big space images get. And so images are really important. And because we have a short attention span, images are easier to absorb than text.
Definitely. So that would be a big tip. And then you also mentioned the 80-20 rule, which is great. It's something I've always done. And the generosity involved in, and I call it social karma. If you want retweets, do some retweets. If you want book reviews, do book reviews. You know, that kind of, if you want readers, then read. You know, I feel like it will come back to you in some way. Is that something that you see as well?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. That guy Kawasaki says it's really a 90-10 rule. And he says, be like NPR, disseminate great information.
Yeah. And then it rubs off on you, the curator, in that way, doesn't it?
I think so. There's this author that I'm thinking of, and of late, all she does is talk about her new books, her previous books, her bestseller books, her boxes of books, her workshops. And I hear friends of mine unfriending her. Mm. They're saying, what's with this person? It's all about her. No one wants to hear that. People are, you know, unsubscribing from her newsletter. It doesn't work. Mm. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Sorry, carry on.
Oh, no. And the other thing I was talking to the friend about is that social media isn't the shopping channel. It's not QVC. You shouldn't use, you know, social media as a medium just to hype your books. Mm. It's social.
Behave like a human.
Yeah. I think that's going to be a blog title. Social media is not QVC.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. And I think, you know, a lot of people are told they have to do this or that. And so they jump in without really understanding the social rules. But, you know, there are social rules like in any interaction. But I wanted to ask you about the authenticity, because to me, that's kind of part of it. But being authentic is actually quite hard for a lot of people. And where do you draw the line on things you share and things you don't? So what does, you know, why is authenticity important? And what are your tips for being authentic?
Well, you need to be genuine. And that's another word for authentic. You need to be consistent with your brand. You need to be consistent with your niche. You need to be consistent with your own sense of integrity. I think you can lose authenticity when you treat social media as a QVC channel. And so be yourself. Don't be snarky. Don't you know, instigate fights. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, I had this follower on Twitter send me this nasty, nasty tweet. And I just ignored it. Mm-hmm. And so when someone does that, ignore it. You know, it's the way you would if you were at a dinner party and somebody said something rude, you would ignore the bad behavior. Mm-hmm. And you probably wouldn't socialize with that person anymore. But ignore the bad behavior. The other issue is, how personal can you be? And writers tend to be introverts. I'm an introvert. And so I don't share a lot of personal information, and I know that I should. You know, people like, you know, Mari Smith might say, you should be more personal on your Facebook page. That's really hard for me to do. I'm sometimes more personal on my profile, and when I am, the comments soar. Hmm. So you have to sort of balance what you're comfortable with.
Hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I know people who, like, I mean, for example, I don't use my husband's name and we don't share a surname, but I will say my husband. So people know I'm married, but they don't know his name, or I don't show pictures of us together. So there's kind of, that's been my line, you know, and you can use like, you can still be authentic with a pseudonym. That's the other question, you know, people get is like, if I'm not using my name, how can I be authentic? Well, you can still share pictures of the flowers in your garden, for example, right?
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Pictures from your favorite writing spot, video of your office, your dog. Of course, I love dogs, so I do have a lot of dogs on my Facebook profile.
All right. So one of the questions I also get a lot is, which sites should people be on? And, you know, people go, you know, should I be on everything? Why do I have to be on Instagram now when I've been on Twitter and blah, blah, blah? So what can you sort of give an overview of, like, what different sites are good for different things?
Right. So I used to be one of the persons who said you need to be everywhere because you don't just want to sell to one zip code range, right? I don't believe that. That's just not true. You want to be where your readers are. And no one has the energy to be on Medium, Facebook, you know, Twitter. I mean, no one has the energy to be on everything, Rebel Mouse. So what I say is it depends. Well, what I've done and I've written about it is I've looked at the Pew Research Center, you know, and their studies on social media use and internet use broken down by sex and, well, gender and age. And so it's really clear that from what I've read and from the research I've seen, that if you are writing YA and even new adult, you need to be on Snapchat. You need to have a presence on Snapchat, I think. A lot of people don't think you need to be there. I do, because they think because the messages can disappear, but you can always do screenshots and save them forever. So Snapchat, Tumblr, Instagram. I would say number one, Instagram, Tumblr. If you have time, Snapchat, Twitter. So I would say Twitter, Tumblr. And what did I say?
Snapchat.
Twitter, Tumblr. And Instagram. And then if you want to add something, Snapchat. So that's for YA, new adult. And so then for romance, you need to be on Pinterest and Twitter and Facebook. I mean, women dominate Facebook. And so you can do really well on Facebook. And Facebook is hard. I would say that Facebook is hard. If you write nonfiction, you need to be on LinkedIn, especially a business book. And I think every author needs to be on Twitter. And I know that Twitter's gotten some really bad press of late. Instagram wants to dunk Twitter, et cetera. But I think that Twitter is right now really important. And if, depending on the, and I think that, the other thing that I think, I used to always hear that authors needed to have one Facebook page for every book. And I don't believe that.
Do not
believe that. I had a client and I was doing a social media audit. She had four or five Facebook pages. And I asked her, why are you doing that? Consolidate them. And now you can consolidate them. So you need to have one author page. Just
per author
one.
Name. Per author name, I think.
Yeah, the author name. And so, yeah, that's what you need. And then, of course, Google Plus is really good for SEO. But I think everyone has to evaluate how much time and energy they have. Do they have the energy to learn a third or fourth or fifth social media network? So what are the main social media networks for their genres? Look at the age groups that hang out on certain social media networks. If you're writing a book that is would appeal to men, you have to be on Google Plus because Google Plus is 65% or 60% men. I think it used to be 80% men. Pinterest is 80% women. And so you have to look at those demographics and decide and figure out where your readers are and then focus only on those social media networks. Don't be, you know, don't be everywhere.
No, I agree with you. And I'd say just on that Facebook pages thing, I completely, you know, it should be one per author name, not per book, because, you know, everyone writes more than one book. I mean, that's what's so crazy. And then you end up with loads. But on Twitter, again, I mean, Twitter changed my life sort of 5 years ago when I joined Twitter. It was one of the big things that changed my life. And most of my friends now I met on Twitter, most of speaking gigs I get are from Twitter. You know, for me, it's a business tool as well as my friend network. But you said Twitter is important. So why do you think it's important?
That's a good question. I think it's a great place. I think a lot can happen on Twitter. Twitter's been, I think I say that based on my own experience. I was, when I was new to Twitter, I met people who really enhanced my career, really furthered my career. You know, Tony White in Wales, you know, once a year I write a post for him. I have book sales in the UK all the time. I met a woman who lives in Malaysia. At the time, she had a very popular Facebook blog. Amari Smith used to comment on there all the time. And she profiled me with 11 other people as sort of the top social media people of the week. on her Facebook page with this huge graphic and a whole blog post with quotes by me. I mean, she did so much for my career back then. And so I've met people. And Nina Muir I met on Twitter. Joel Friedlander I really got to know through Twitter and Facebook. So I've met so many people through Twitter. And I think in my book sales, the number one traffic referral source to my website is Twitter. Mm-hmm. So I think that can happen for other authors as well. Mm-hmm. You can find a great community of colleagues within your niche who will help you promote your book.
Yeah.
You will find so many people on Twitter. It's a lot of authors are there. A lot of readers are there. A lot of readers, a lot of book nerds, a lot of book lovers, a lot of literary agents. There's just, it's a great place for authors that can really further your book sales and your career.
And mainly, I think, again, those people you met, you know, I met Joel Friedlander also on Twitter. I've still never met him in person. But, you know, in that way, it's the people you meet on Twitter that then develop into a podcast interview or, you know, you meet them at a conference and can start the kind of snowball. Now, I wanted to ask you about judging people based on their social presence. So when how much do you think that's important? So people putting a professional bio, professional picture, what are the things that when somebody tweets you or something, what do you look at to make a judgment about them?
I look at their avatar, their profile picture. And if it's of a cat, I don't follow them. Mm. If it's not a picture of the person, I don't follow them. Same thing on LinkedIn. People want to connect with me. There's no picture or a picture of an animal. I don't follow them. Mm. The other thing I look at is their bio. If it's, you know, all hashtags, cappuccino, frappuccino, cat lover, dog lover, book lover, all this stuff. And I don't know anything about them, really. They like coffee. They like animals. I don't know. I don't really know. There was this one guy, he was French, and he just wrote, no. And there was another one. It was a poet. I forget. He had another funny one. I can't remember what it is right now. So, you know, or maybe that other guy said no, yes. So I assumed sometimes he says no, sometimes he says yes. Well, we all do that.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah. So the tip I think there is, you know, you've got to be careful of your bio. Like, don't just slap something up. You know, I very much judge people and only follow back if they use the words like author and writer.
Yes, yes,
for
me
example.
Too.
Yeah, I don't like people who have health, nutrition. Or to be honest, if people have all hashtags, I assume they're doing Instagram as their primary.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, and the eggheads.
Yeah.
I don't follow eggheads.
No, never do the egg. But it's funny, isn't it? I know, I think, you know, we're both very mature users of Twitter, for example. Both of us have been there a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's funny how much you learn just by doing. And I have to admit, I don't know the way to behave on Instagram, for example, or the way to behave on Snapchat. So, you know, you can't be master of all the networks, you know.
As no, you can't.
You do just have to kind of pick your one or two, I guess.
Yes. Yes.
And be a master then. But I wanted to ask you about Pinterest because I I've heard it's where people spend the most money in terms of actually buy stuff. And secondly, I use it for fiction only. I have one board per book with all the images around my writing. But what can authors use Pinterest for and what are your tips for Pinterest?
Well, Pinterest is the number two traffic referral. So Facebook is number one. Pinterest is number two, and there's a far distance with other social media networks. So they're really rivals. And I think Pinterest is only number two because Facebook has 1.4 billion users, right? So I wrote a post, and in that post, I have 57 boards that authors can use and have. And so...
just a couple.
you want a blog. You want a board for your blog images. My most pinned images come from my blog. You want to have, you can have boards for funky libraries, beautiful libraries, interesting bookshelves, quotes from authors about writing, memes about the writing process, book covers from your colleagues, the meals that your characters would likely eat or do eat, images of the venues where your characters live and travel to, So I have 57 here.
Yeah. Well, there is so basically what we're saying is group it into obvious boxes or boards, as they're called. They need to be grouped images, right?
Right, right. And you want to, if you are pinning images from your website, like your blog, you don't want the image to be called image number 3, you know, or NX254. You want to have the title of your blog post and by the author's name. And you can even include the link to the blog post, although it will link anyways, because if you click twice on any image, it goes right to the website where it came from. So to have a board for your blog post is really important, because it really helps, because Pinterest is number 3 for traffic referral to my website. Number 1 is Twitter, number 2 is Facebook, number 3 is Pinterest.
So when you say those image names, do you mean the actual, like the URL of the image itself? So it should be,
The alt, so when
so the alt tag, yeah.
Yeah, the alt tag.
Okay, and if people don't know what that means, Google it. It's way too complicated to explain in a podcast, but no, that's really important, because I am now you've said that, I'm like, oh damn, because I had to pause there. I've just been terrible about taking snapshots with on the Mac and then just pasting those into my blog post, which have got the terrible date names instead of names. So now I'm like, oh damn. But no, that's great. So any other sort of thoughts around Pinterest? Like for me, you know, is it that people buy craft and necklaces and stuff and dresses? Mm-hmm. Like, do people buy books through Pinterest?
You know, I can't track as authors who have books on Amazon, we can't track where the sales come from. So, it's a hard question for me to answer, because we don't know where the book sales come from.
Can you use affiliate links on Pinterest?
Oh, yeah. I know people, and their accounts are entirely affiliate links, okay. All their accounts.
Well, because that's one way you can actually, if you use an affiliate code, you could track the books.
You could use an affiliate code for that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that might be the way to do it. An ID on the actual thing. That might be a good idea, because then you could track which specific links were working. I think that's a good recommendation.
Yeah.
And then,
the other thing you can do is you can do a specific shortener for all of your book links. And then you can track where it came from.
Yeah.
Like use certain URLs for your books that you mention on Twitter, and then certain ones on Pinterest, and that way you can track the links.
Yeah. I know the plugin that people like at the moment is Pretty Links.
Yeah. I like that one too.
Yeah, it's one people are using. So, I mean, people are using Pinterest, I know, around fiction. Like, it makes sense to me. But you're saying you're using it for a non-fiction blog, right? So what images are you using for a non-fiction blog post?
I create them. I create two images for all my blogs. So the first one, and they're part text and they're part image. And so there's one at the top of the blog, and it's size that works well for Twitter, and it works well for Facebook. And I have the Twitter card plugin on my website. And then I create an image that you can't see on my blog. And you only see it if you click the pin it button. And it's this huge image. Oh. And it's basically the same image on the smaller, on the Twitter-sized image. But, I mean, the picture is the same picture, but it's bigger and the text is bigger. So I create a replica, basically, but on a template made for Pinterest using Canva. And you don't see it, but that's one that goes on Pinterest. Because the ones that are sized for Facebook and Twitter don't work on Pinterest because they're too small.
How do you have it so people don't see it?
I use Social Warfare.
Is that a plugin?
So, yeah, Social Warfare is a plugin, and it's a social share plug in at Track Social Shares, and then on the backside of your website, you can decide which images you want to share on social media, which ones everything but Pinterest, which ones you want to share on Pinterest, and what you want to say. It can be different than your blog title. So, and you can even write the description that goes with your Pinterest image.
Ah, this is very cool. See, and to people who are just going, what are they talking about? This is quite a good technical show, actually. We're really getting down into the weeds, which is great because, you know, we need to do that, actually. And I think what this shows to people is that this is not just, you don't just jump on the site and use it. Like, you've talked about creation tools, scheduling tools, analytics tools, yeah, plugins. We don't just use Twitter.com. In fact, we don't use Twitter.com, right? Really? We use all these tools. So another question on images. So you mentioned Canva. What are your favorite kind of image sites and places to get images and places to make images?
I love unsplash.com. I don't know if you use that.
I don't. I only heard about it last week.
Oh my gosh, their images are gorgeous, just gorgeous. So I love that site. I subscribe to, what is it? Is it No Stock Photos or Death to Stock Photos?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And once a week or once a month, they send me some images. I think 123RF, I think it's called. They send me images. I use Pixabay, Pixabay. And I have a whole list of ones that I can always, there's Morphfile, although I don't really like Morphfile that much. But there's a whole bunch of them that I can refer to.
And you make them all on Canva?
I use Canva, yes. It's so easy to use because the templates are there and they keep up with all the image sizing. And so whenever you use a template, you know that it's up to date.
Yeah, I use Canva as well. It's amazing. I mean, you can use it. You can use it also for sort of PowerPoint slides and all kinds of things. It's great.
Yeah,
so I wanted to ask you, let's not get into YouTube and too much video, but I wanted to ask you about Periscope, which is kind of like, it's not Twitter's new thing, is it? But it's on Twitter as well. So anyway, any chance you can explain Periscope and what we should do with it?
Periscope, I haven't explored it too much, though I have experimented. I took a video of my office, then I quickly deleted it because it was so awful. forgot to move the dirty dog bed. So it's fun. It is a mobile app for video that you can, if you want, share on Twitter instantly. And you sign up with via Twitter because Twitter bought it. And they suggest followers and you can add followers from Twitter. And I think it holds promise for authors. As long as authors don't create boring videos, you want to have a great title. You want there to be personality, you know, and I have a hard time projecting personality because I'm such an introvert. But I was watching some videos by Alex Petit, P-E-T-T-I-T-T. Mm. He has, I think, over 300,000 followers on Periscope already. And he's got incredible personality, and he does daily videos. He's on YouTube daily. All he talks about is Periscope. Of course, his videos are short and he's just hot. And so I think it can be really fun, especially for authors who are humorous, who can be humorous, humorous part of a book event. I think it's great. And I think it's Twitter's way of trying to move more into the visual social web. I think they have to. Obviously there are problems with Twitter right now with changing the CEOs, and there's little to no user growth. Instagram is saying they're going to dunk Twitter. So I think that this, you know, the board at Twitter is saying, okay, we need a new CEO, we need new projects, we need to move this thing along. And I think they will. I don't think something like social media, that Twitter would ever die. They need to be continually innovative. Facebook's always buying applications.
Mm. Yeah, it's a very good point. I hope Twitter doesn't die because I love it. I don't think
I know. Twitter is my thing. That's what I love it.
Yeah, and I mean the crazy thing is I would now pay for Twitter. Like I would pay for it.
Yeah. I would too.
Yeah, exactly. They've really, you know, I think when you find your place, that means a lot. You know, it really does mean a lot. Like to me, Facebook, whatever. I mean, I'm appreciating Facebook advertising, but yeah. Facebook on a personal level, I don't care about. But Twitter's right. Like, oh, it's like my lifeline to a world outside my, you know, little space, little writer's space. But let's just talk about pay to play, right? Because this is the way that many of these social networks are going. Like Facebook in the last year, it's pretty much pointless to try for organic reach now on pages.
I know. Yes. I know. That's what I tell clients. I tell them that Facebook is hard because several years ago, it was guaranteed that 32% of the people who had liked your Facebook page would see your post. Mm. And it's down to about 6%. Mm. And so the algorithm of Facebook is based on likes, shares, and comments. And the holy grail of Facebook is shares. Mm. So how often are people sharing your content? And the less often someone likes, comments, and shares your content, the less often they're going to see what you write in their news feeds. And so the only way you can supersede that is through advertising. And that's what Facebook wants you to do because they have to monetize this application.
Mm-hmm. And I've had recently Mark Dawson on the show talking about Facebook ads for authors, uh-huh. And I've just started to play with it. And you uh-huh. know, some things have gone amazingly, amazingly well, and other things have just completely crashed. And I think that's the problem with advertising. You need to do a lot of testing and things. So do you have a view of sort of in general what is worth paying for? Because Pinterest has started paid advertising as well. Twitter has right. paid advertising. There's paid right. advertising popping up everywhere. What is worth it and what are your tips for that?
You know, the authors that I have seen, I had a client who would devote $10,000 a year to Facebook advertising. That's a lot of money. And he was a retired surgeon, so he could afford that. And he had amazing results with his advertising. But for the typical indie author, $10,000 a year is not feasible, you know. So I tell people, don't fall for that little sexy blue button boost post to go into Facebook ads and create your ad there. And since 80% of Facebook users are mobile only, you need to have your ad appear in a mobile newsfeed. If your reading demographic, you know, is 60 and over, then you want it to appear in the desktop newsfeed. Do not select those ads on the right. Just don't do that. And when you create your ad, think about your readers. Think about their demographics. Think about what age they are, what languages they speak, you know, what countries they're from. You know, what they might read, just really look at the behaviors and characteristics because the ads allow you to do that. Mm. Set your budget. Now, when I took a class from Mari Smith on Facebook advertising a year ago, she had said, you know, make sure that the audience reach is right at 20,000 people. Well, I took another Facebook advertising class because you can never take too many. And this person said, no, it's changed. Now the audience reach has to be 50,000. So what I would have trouble doing when I create a Facebook ad is getting it at that magical number, because typically I'm either at 1.5 million or 1,000, right? And so I have to spend a lot of time with the behaviors and characteristics and all those things in order to reach the 50,000 mark to make the ad worthwhile. Mm. And then there's the advertising budget you have to decide on.
Yeah, I think there's two things there. One is the kind of the customer avatar idea. You know, I think all of this, we have to get out of the head of the author and turn our head to be that of the reader, like the other side yes. of the, like the totally the other side of the relationship, which is very hard for most authors for their own books. Like, you know, you're a consultant, you can look at somebody's books and tell them better, you know, often in a better way than we can do it ourselves. It's very hard. you know, to do it yourself. Uh-huh. But, and that's what you're talking about with the audience, when you have to decide things about the audience. You know, there are people listening going, how do I know if people are shopping on mobile for my books? Or how do I know if they're over 65? You know, that type of question. Do you have any ways to figure out that customer avatar?
Well, who reads your books? You know, when, you know, there's a colleague, and I asked her, I said, well, who's your audience? And she said, everybody. Mm. Well, when you market to everybody, you market to no one. Mm. And so my audience for my clients, I know they're typically 45, it depends if they're authors or 45 and above. If they're private enterprises, they're 35 to 45, you know, if they're entrepreneurs. So I have these two demographics that I work with. So when I do an ad, I know which demographic I want to market to, although I do very little. I only have like two business clients, because I've really moved into authors. That's what I want to do. So what I am doing. So I know that for authors, there aren't any people who are 25 or 29 who are going to want to hire me. And so with your readers, if you're a romance writer, you have to think, who's reading my book? Who reads romance books? Who reads this genre? Who reads? I know someone who wrote a zombie romance book. Who's likely to read a zombie romance book? It's just,
yeah. It's difficult, but you have to have a go. And also what I like about what you're doing, I mean, you demonstrate in your own business the power of content. You do some massive list posts with loads of useful stuff, but you're also paying for advertising. And I think this is something I'm learning. You have to balance content marketing, attraction marketing, with paid kind of push advertising. You know, I think if you have some budget, it's good to, you know, like BookBub, we all know about using BookBub, but I think social media marketing is another way. But I could talk to you for days, because I'm so interested in this. But one last question, and you actually mentioned about things changing, like the Facebook numbers changing. Everything changes so fast, right? We cannot guess what's happening in social media in general, like next week. Facebook changes the rules every week. But do you see anything up and coming that, you know, people should know about in terms of, you know, or anything, any sort of ways things are changing?
Well, on Twitter, Project Lightning, they're supposed to come out sometime later this year. It was some time ago, 6 months or 8 months ago, a year ago, they had the Discover tab on Facebook, and on Twitter, and they've done away with that. And the Discover tab, you could find people to follow, and you would find some story that they thought you'd be interested in. Of course, I was never interested in the story they thought I'd be interested in. And now Project Lightning is going to have a special button, and you hit it, and it's the top stories of the day that people are talking about on Twitter, whether it's something similar to the Arab Spring, or it's the NBA finals in the United States, or if it's the World Cup, there'll be a special tab for that. So I know that's coming. On Facebook, something's always changing. I just opened Facebook today, and they said, look what's new. You can now, there's now a button on your banner that says, update your activity log. Mm-hmm. So, and update your information about yourself. I mean, it seems like every week when I go to Facebook, there's a little notice that something has changed. But I don't know what else is coming.
Yeah, but change is the normal, basically. Everybody, we have to keep adapting. This is not going to stay still, basically.
They have to keep changing. They have to keep changing. You know, but I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago, I wrote a blog post for Joel Friedlander about Facebook rooms. And I don't know what's happened with that, you know, tell you the truth. I mean, they come out with these innovations and then they disappear. And Facebook had the option to have lists where you could list your favorite Facebook pages. And my clients who have new Facebook pages, there's no way to get a list. It's kind of gone. It's still on my Facebook account, but I don't see it on anybody else's account. So it's changing all the time.
And that's another reason why you have to find the things that are fun for you, so that if it, you know, do the things that are fun, and then it doesn't really matter.
Exactly.
But finally, obviously some people don't want to do their own social media and also might not have a clue. So what do you have and what do you offer to authors on your site?
I have my blog, which is a free content that keeps people up to date. I have my books, And I do social media audits. So if you're wondering if you're being successful in social media or if there's some areas of improvement you could experience, I will review your social media and I'll also review your website and your blog and give you feedback. And then I also handle social media for clients. And I have clients who are nonfiction writers, who are fiction writers, and who write picture books. So the whole scope of genres. Don't have a YA writer yet, but I'm sure I will. So I do have a YA writer. She's brand new. Yes, I have a YA writer too. Yay! So I handle social media for them. And so that means that I go out there and I curate the content, I schedule it, I socialize for them, and I do the analytics for them.
Brilliant. And where can people find you and your site online?
Social media, justforwriters.com.
Share your Twitter handle as well?
Yes, it's my name backwards, Caballo Frances.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for your time, Frances. That was great.
Oh, it was fun. It's fun talking to you.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.